Joe Scurry received multiple injuries in a motor vehicle accident a couple of years ago, and this is her story. For a while, she was in quite a dark place, but then rode in Cat Webb on her white, shining Arabian charger and really pretty much kind of gave Joe her life back. I don't think that's putting it too strongly. And using evidence-based motor learning to really do that. And so this is Joe's story, and Joe is very eloquent and tells her story matter-of-factly and clearly, and I got a lot from this conversation, and I know you are going to as well. So without further ado, here is Joe Scurry. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Raph.
Nice to talk with you.
Yeah, you too.
So you're currently in week three of your certificate form?
Yep, almost finished week three.
And you've got quite an amazing story.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, I guess, in terms of how I found my way to you guys.
Yeah, well, where would you like to start?
Let's start from the beginning, I guess. How do you want to handle it? Do you want to ask me kind of questions, or should I just walk you through what actually happened and how I ended up injured?
Yeah, you just tell me however you want to tell it.
Yeah, cool. So, I've been active most of my life, like really active. I've done Pilates on and off for 15 years and always loved it. Boxing, running, general gym stuff. I'm from an active family and my husband's active and was a really big part of our life. So in 2017, I was, I just had my first baby and was getting myself kind of back on track with work and juggling a almost 12-month-old. Back in the gym, feeling strong, feeling active, and probably at my peak of my life, I guess. I'd, you know, had this beautiful baby and healthy marriage and, you know, was feeling really fit and strong and doing really well at work. And then unfortunately I was a few days before Christmas in 2017 crossing the road with a group of friends from work, and we were in the group that was collected in the Flinders Street attack. So you might remember there was a guy who deliberately drove through a big group of pedestrians in the city.
Yeah, I do.
And I was in the middle of that group of people. So physically, it's pretty easy to articulate what the result of that was. I ended up in the Royal Melbourne Hospital, and I was really lucky out of our group of friends and a lot of other people that were there. So I had a break to my left fibula and some soft tissue damage around that ankle.
And the fibula is the lower leg bone.
Yeah, yep. So just below my knee, I guess where the, not sure what hit me there, whether it was a person or a bumper bar, but it was a pretty clean break, so I didn't require surgery. But I did require, I was in a boot for about 4 months, so it was quite a visible injury. Got a lot of questions from people in the street when I was initially, you know, still able to get out and about. I had nerve damage to that leg as well, and soft tissue or ligament damage to my pelvis and my neck and shoulder. So all kind of left side was my injuries. And because of my shoulder injury, I couldn't be on a crutch. So I actually was in a wheelchair for my first, just until I could weight bear on that leg. So I spent first Christmas with our daughter Christmas photos of me in a wheelchair with my ridiculous moon boot on my foot. So it was the injuries were really, really visible, I guess, and they attracted a lot of, you know, harmlessly curious questions from people when we'd be out and about, just the normal things that, you know, I guess you say to people, what have you done to yourself? How'd you do that? But because of the intense trauma that I had gone through and was still working through, that sort of those questions were the first, I guess, what's the right way to put it? They were the first piece that got me to stay at home, basically, because I didn't want to have to answer any questions about what had happened. So from that period on, I became pretty isolated, didn't really leave my house. To be honest, I didn't really leave my bedroom for the first few months. It was a pretty dark time.
And you had two young children, right? Obviously, you have two young children.
At that point, right? I have two young children. I had one at that point. So this all happened a couple of days before Christmas, 2 weeks before her first birthday. Mm-hmm. So it was, we got a lot of support, which was fantastic. We had a case manager come into the house and kind of assess that I wasn't going to be able to parent physically and mentally. I just wasn't, you know, people would pass me Daphs, that's my youngest, Daphne, and I just wouldn't know what to do with her. I just had disconnected from reality. So we needed a lot of support in terms of we had a full-time nanny because my husband works a lot. And physically I just couldn't keep up with her. She was still crawling at that stage, and my initial goal was that I wanted to be walking, you know, without a boot before she was. Mm-hmm. But you know what kids that age are like, but they want to be in everything, and it's not safe if you can't keep up with them.
Yes. I remember our daughter's now 13, but I remember that stage very well. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it probably stays with you forever. It's a pretty crazy period, just trying to keep them safe all the time. Yep. So, yeah, so that was really tricky, and that was hard for my whole family. Everyone had to pitch in, and we had a lot of support provided to us through TAC, which was fantastic. We didn't have to ask for much, and we got a lot. And I guess in those initial weeks or months, it's all a bit of a blur, but I hadn't really considered, it sounds weird because I had physical injuries, but I wasn't really focused on them because everything else was much more kind of consuming, all the mental stuff and, you know, just trying to figure out how we were going to manage our household. So it wasn't until my first session, I got assigned through TAC with a physio who was local, mm-hmm. and felt really positive kind of walking out of that session. We had a plan. I was going to get, you know, in the gym pretty quickly with them, starting my rehab program, and that would be quite intensive, 3 days a week. And then a one-on-one session with him at the end of the week to see how I'd gone. So I felt really excited that we had this plan and I was going to get to focus on moving again. And it wasn't until I stepped foot into that rehab program that I realized I'm actually quite injured. This is actually really frustrating. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a big imposition on my life. I think it wasn't until they got me to do some of those really basic movements of, you know, hinging at the hips and trying to get some rotation happening through my thoracic, but I just had really underestimated how sore I was, how stiff I was, and how, looking back on it now, how much confidence I'd lost.
Mm-hmm. And how many weeks post-injury was this?
I started seeing my physio pretty soon into the new year. So I'd say it was 4 weeks mm-hmm. post-injury. I still had the boot on, so we were pretty limited in what we could do, but he felt it was important. He could see that I was really, you know, chomping at the bit, like, give me something to focus on, because I couldn't work, and I was lucky to be being looked after by TAC, but I really saw that getting better was going to be my job, my full-time job. So I saw my appointments with my psychologist and my appointments with my physio, that was my job, and I really wanted, you know, to get into it. Mm-hmm. So whether I was ready to kind of get into the gym or not, I don't know what the normal mentality is around that, but I was kind of begging for us to start doing something with me. I was really fortunate to have a team that worked really well together, that worked really closely with my GP and my psychologist. So I had a really good support network, but I had just lost, I'd been hit by a car. So I'd lost a lot of physical, you know, just ability, but I'd also lost a lot of confidence and was really obsessing over my injuries.
Mm-hmm. So that, you know, going from being someone who was super active and mm-hmm. basically always exercising to mm-hmm. to being and probably I imagine someone who you felt quite, you know, confident in your physical mm-hmm. capacities to mm-hmm. realizing that you couldn't actually, like, turn to the left or, you know, yep. basic things like that.
Yeah.
Was a real kind of confronting, it sounds like.
Was confronting, and I quite quickly got depressed, you know, and I think that's also I did suffer from pretty chronic PTSD as well. So the depression, you know, it was physical and it was very mental what I was mm. going through. It, you know, had challenges from every angle. And then you're a parent with a young kid as well, so you're just exhausted anyway.
Right. And just the parenting of the young kid, you know, everything else aside, like, is enough yeah. to drive people crazy.
Yeah. And I think when it's your first kid as well, your whole world has changed. So I'd only just found myself again and been like, all right, cool, I've got this. Like, I was feeling really good about myself. But you do go through that period of time, what I did, and, you know, I've got a lot of friends who say the same, where you're just like, what has happened to my life? Who am I?
Yeah.
So I think it's such a period of transition anyway. And then I'd had a huge part of my identity, or multiple parts of my identity, kind of taken away from me all at once. So it was really, really tough.
And when was this? Remind me. Because I have a very vivid memory of watching that stuff on the news, but I've got no clue when it was.
It was the 21st of December 2017.
So two and a half years ago now.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So you're back in rehab. You're, you mm-hmm. know, 4 or 5 weeks post injury, and so you've got a great. You're feeling mentally real and emotionally very fragile, and but you had a great team. So yeah, tell me what happened next.
So, and I think a big focus for my team was just getting me out. So the only time that I would leave my house was to go to rehab, and they knew that. The only kind of social interaction that I would have was with the guys down at reception when I was checking in, and then with my physios. So their focus was really partly on providing me an environment where I didn't have to talk about Flinders Street. Mm-hmm. And helping build my confidence up. But also they had a pretty, in the rehab room, they were fantastic, and they, you know, they did literally help rebuild my body, but they were constantly pumping my brakes for me as well. So I was, when I'd get a little bit more confident, I'd be keen to do more, and I'd be keen to do more outside the rehab room. And their line was always, you need to slow down, you're going to re-injure yourself, we need to slow you down. So I think that dynamic, which is my understanding of how it works in the rehab world, you know, you need to take it slowly and be careful, really have to be careful or you'll hurt yourself again. When you're someone who's suffering from pretty chronic PTSD, you don't have a lot of confidence, and you're hearing that a lot, it really becomes a big part of your psyche, I guess. I was really concerned about re-injuring myself, and really frustrated. So I had just accepted to a point, and I improved so much through that rehab program. They got me so much stronger, and they got my range of movement. You know, my injuries were really inconvenient, but they weren't, you know, I had friends that were with me that were much more seriously injured than I was. So they were injuries that we could manage and move through in a relatively, you know, reasonable time frame. But I guess I had just accepted that my life from an activity level would never look like it did before.
Right. And why was that?
I kept being told, really, there's things that you just won't be able to do, particularly with the injuries around my pelvis, and some of the nerve damage in my leg. I was just told, you know, that I would probably need to find other ways to get enjoyment from movement. And I mean, I used to go pretty hard in the gym, so I liked high intensity stuff. And I, you know, when I was running, I was doing lots of sprints and boxings, obviously pretty high intensity workout. So I think they were just trying to manage my expectations that, you know, they didn't even want me doing single leg movements when we were doing Pilates stuff. They were pretty firm about that. I wasn't allowed to do a single leg kind of movement throughout my whole program.
Are you able to give me any of the like technical details of what actually happened to your pelvis? Because you told me before soft tissue injury.
Yeah. So I guess the most clarity that I've ever been given around it is it's an SIJ injury. And the complication then that my pelvis was, and it's interesting because now I'm doing all of this research while I'm studying with you guys, the word instability was thrown around a lot. So my pelvis wasn't stable. It wasn't stable. We needed to do more work to create stability, but those ligaments around there might not function the way that they need to again. So it's not stable, basically. So I just had all of this fear that, what does that mean? You know, is my pelvis going to, like, what's actually going to happen? So now I understand that that's a pretty dated way of thinking about injuries in general, I guess. But the added complication was that I fell pregnant as I was going through my rehab program, and they were concerned that that would flare up my SIJ issues, so the hormonal stuff that happens with relaxin would further unstabilize my pelvis, and I was getting a lot of pain. So that hearing these messages and also having regular flare ups, you know, I would be walking down my hallway and my left leg would just come out from underneath me, and I'd have really bad pain through my lower back.
Is this after you became pregnant or before as
well? Yeah. Oh no, before as well, but I didn't have as much movement before because I was in the boots and wasn't walking as much. So it was kind of like the more active I became. So it's difficult to really put it down to, was it the pregnancy? Was it because I was moving more? But the pain was really quite extraordinary, really. It was that really sharp, intense pain that only lasts for, you know, maybe a couple of seconds, but then the dull ache that comes with it for maybe sometimes 4 or 5 days. I'd feel like I just couldn't put weight or couldn't stand up straight. So hearing that message that it's around pelvis instability and relaxing and all of that, and you're having the pain at the same time, you just further go down that line, I guess, of thinking my body's not, I'm not safe if I'm moving. I've got to be really careful. And that was incredibly frustrating because you feel like you're making progress and then you have a flare up and you blame your body for it.
Mm-hmm. I'm struggling to bite my tongue here because this really makes my blood boil.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you got you actually got some really beneficial help in the exercise realm. And
definitely.
They really helped you get stronger and improve your range of motion and feel more confident in those physical capacities. But at the same time, you sadly got kind of regressed, I think, in the mental realm.
Massively. I'd say there's two factors to this. So I was getting a consistent message from people that I trusted, that, you know, I should not be pushing my body because it might break, basically, like not in those words, but that sort of explanation.
Well, if that's the message that you took, it's like, yeah, you know, communication is composed of words, tone, mm-hmm. context, mm-hmm. body language. You know, there's so many components to it. And if the meaning you took was, you know, if you move too much, you'll break. Like, I think that's the communication.
That's the communication. The other element to it is, as part of my PTSD, the injuries were an easy way to justify why I wasn't coping. They were the visible scars from the attack. So I think there was subconsciously a part of me that wasn't ready, for whatever reason, to be fully fit and functioning and healthy. Even though I was still getting pain and still getting messages from my body that it didn't feel good. But the, you know, when the boot came off and when I'd start to move in the right direction, there was a sense of, oh God, what does this mean? Are people going to expect that I'm over this right. mentally?
So the visible, the visible injuries are going away, but you still felt very much affected by it.
And almost was getting worse. The better I got physically, the worse I was getting mentally, partly because of the extended isolation and whatnot, but partly because I think that's how PTSD works. It's kind of, you know, creeps up on you over time.
Okay. And so you're in kind of the mid to late stages of rehab, I guess. I'm not sure, like, is this a few months after?
So I was in that same program with that same kind of progress, bit of pain, messaging, regress, I guess, it was 12 months. And then I stopped going just before I had Poppy, my youngest. And I think that break that I had Poppy by elective Caesar. So Daphne was an emergency Caesar and I had Poppy via elective. So then, you know, there's a whole another physical recovery that you kind of need to go through from there. But I was familiar with that process. New baby in the house, new focus. We had to go to court over, you know, I had to go and give evidence in court. And so my focus for a couple of months was really taken away from the rehab program. I didn't have headspace for it. I didn't have physical capacity after my Caesar initially, and I didn't have time for it. And as much as I loved my physio, I got to the end of that window and just something in me felt like I, even though I've been told I need to come back and rebuild, something in me was saying you need to try something else and just see what happens, because I think it's difficult when you're in that cycle and you can't see how damaging it is. And I'm not criticizing, I'm definitely not criticizing my physio. I've got a lot of respect for him, but the cycle definitely was not working for my recovery to feel confident in movement. So I spoke to my physio about trying to, so that I should explain, the physio that I saw one-on-one was not the physio that I was doing rehab with. He oversaw the program, but it was a different physio that I was doing my rehab program with, and he had actually left while I was away having Poppy. So that to me was kind of another sign that maybe it's time to do something else. So I went and chatted to my physio and said, I feel like I need some more autonomy in this next stage. He had previously advocated for me with TAC to get a reformer at home, and TAC had paid for a beautiful brand new reformer. So I had that already set up. Oh,
good old TAC.
Yeah, I know. I had that set up, but was too scared to use it on my own. Even though I'd been doing Pilates as part of my rehab and for years and years before that, I didn't feel like I was allowed to move without someone telling me if my hips were in the exact right position or, you know, all of that stuff.
You'd been disempowered.
Completely. Completely disempowered. And I think the point where I knew that things were really bad, he'd given me a gym program to do at our local gym, and I walked in, you know, I'd signed up, I'd had a meeting with the gym owner, I'd signed up and walked in and felt so overwhelmed looking at the weights and looking at my program. I was too scared to pick up a weight because I felt like, well, who's going to come and tell me if my shoulder's not in the right position, or if I'm not, you know, if my shins aren't completely straight when I'm squatting, and all of that stuff that had been drummed into me. And I just ended up walking out. And I've heard of people being in that situation in a gym environment before, that they, you know, they just can't do it. But that had never been me. I'd spent a lot of my adult life in the gym. And that I found that really, really hard, really sad. Because I realized how much of this was mental, and I think frustratingly how much I still had to overcome. So I did a bit of research, and I'd already been following, you know, a few people on Instagram. I'm pretty selective about who I follow, especially during that time. I didn't follow fitness accounts or anything because it just made me feel crap about myself. But there were a few accounts that I did follow, and one was for a studio in Fitzroy for Good Times Pilates. We live down near the peninsula now, but we lived in Fitzroy just around the corner from that studio for like 7 years before we moved down this way. So it was in a familiar area. I still haven't gone back to the city and can't go back to the city. And thought that I couldn't go back to an inner city area as well, but kind of spoke to my husband after having a think and thought maybe I should go. Like, I know that I love Pilates. I know that I love Fitzroy. This chick who runs this place looks really cool.
She is really cool.
Yeah, she is. She's the best. I was like, I'm just going to, I need to do something different. And My husband, you know, he knew that this needed to happen. So he's like, just do it. Just do whatever you need to do. Just do it. So I actually got my mum to come with me for my first session. I emailed Kat and just said, introduced myself. I didn't tell her any of the context because I didn't want to. I kind of wanted this to be a new chapter, and I just said, you know, I was keen to come with my mum and do a two-on-one Pilates session, and what did she reckon? And we had a bit of back and forth with email and booked in the session, and me and my mum got our Pilates gear on and went down and did a session with Kat, and I gave her a heads up about my injuries, and she listened but didn't focus too much on them. And I was really nervous that I'd say, you know, I've got this injury, and she'd say, hey, how would you do that? And it would turn into a big thing. But she just listened and was like, yep, cool, okay. Let's get on the reformer and move. And it was just, after that session, I actually cried. Like, it sounds really cheesy, but I got in the car and called Pat and cried, because it was just like, that was so much fun. That was so much fun, and probably the best that I've felt since everything happened. It was the most normal that I've felt in, you know, God, it had probably been 18 months at that point. And my mum was like, okay, so if you feel safe there, you know, you go and do your thing. And we were trying to figure out, how was I logistically going to get there, because we live a long way away. I'm pretty terrified on the roads. I'm really jumpy around other drivers and whatnot, as part of, you know, just my PTSD symptoms. So worked with my psychologist on a plan for that. Everyone could see that this good times Pilates was going to be a really integral part of my recovery, I guess. It was like the next chapter. And I don't think Kat fully understands this. I've never gone into this much detail with her, but my whole team of like GP, Pat, my mum.
Pat's your husband?
Pat's my husband, yeah. My mum and my psychologist were all like, how are we going to make this work? What's the plan? So my mum would drive down from Canterbury on Thursdays. I'd do some breathing exercises before I got in the car. There was a couple of times where I'd had a bad week. My older brother would drive me up instead. If Pat had the day off work, he would take me just in those early days. So it was a full mission, but it was also so integral to my recovery, because we would get there and I told Kat probably our first or second one-on-one, you know, we started to get into my story a bit, and she, you know, understood, I guess, the trauma that I'd been through as well and how disempowered I'd been. But she didn't make our sessions about that. She didn't ask, you know, all the questions that people normally ask. And I didn't feel like all of a sudden I was being defined by that experience. I felt like her and I were on this mission to light up my face again, basically. Yeah.
And in that first, I want to go back to that first session where you know, you got in the car afterwards and you cried because you hadn't felt that happy for, you know, the longest time.
18 months. Yeah.
What was it about that session that was so joyful for you?
Because I just did stuff. I just gave stuff a crack, and it wasn't like, I think I had the safety net of knowing that Kat wasn't going to get me to do anything that was dangerous and I'd fall off the reformer or whatever. She knew that I'd recently had a baby via cesarean, so she was going to have that in the back of her mind anyway, like other injuries aside. So I felt like I'm in a safe space. Nothing about this is about Flinders Street. Nothing about this is about my restrictions. It's just about having fun and moving and laughing. I don't know
if she's anyone listening to this.
She's so goofy, and I'm really goofy as well. So just that laughter, and I think in that moment I'm not a mum, I'm not someone who's been through a trauma, I'm not anything, I'm just on the reformer, like trying not to fall off because I'm laughing so hard at something ridiculous that Kat said. So in that first session, she didn't push me to do anything crazy, but we just moved, and it was, and I realized that I could.
And she just didn't make a big thing of it.
She didn't make a big thing of it at all. And even in those early sessions following, when you know, I was going to court in between times of seeing her and stuff, and so she knew it was pretty heavy going. But our focus was on the movement, and she had me doing, I think our second session, she got me doing tree, and I was in full extension with like my head basically touching the floor, like stuff that I just thought I would never, ever be able to do, Raf. Like, I'd seen it on Instagram and just been like, oh, that's cool.
And
my body's
tree,
never going to let me do
tree
that.
Tree is where you're sitting, basically you're sitting on a box on top of a movable
yep.
carriage, and you one leg's hooked under a strap, and you're in a full back bend, like you said, and the other leg's kind of poking up at the ceiling. So it's it's a pretty athletic sort of a position to get into.
And I think session three or four, she got me doing snake. She got me doing tendon stretch with like a dip at the bottom. Like, she just, in the early stages, I would walk out, like I would just want to hug her. And I'd walk out and I'd get on the phone to Pat straight away and just be like, you will not believe what I just did. And now also that I'm learning, you know, through breathe about cueing and motor learning, and she would just give me all of the right encouragement, and she was building my confidence, and she was, I would walk out of those sessions just feeling like a totally different person. To the point that it became a non-issue for me having to drive there. It just wasn't even something that, you know, obviously my psychologist and I would check in on it, and she was just blown away that with the progress that I was making with driving. Because I was going to do something that I loved in an area that I liked, you know.
Tell me about, well, I just, you know, I want to just share with you, you know, super briefly that when I was 19, I was involved in a car accident. I was a backseat passenger, and another car jumped the median strip and hit us head on. And, you know, so I had some fairly serious injuries, and I had emergency abdominal surgery. And
oh my goodness.
I feel quite lucky in hindsight, because the rehab advice I got was the doctor saying, oh, just, you know, lie on your back and do some leg raises, you know.
Yeah.
And that was it. but I can totally identify with you being kind of gun shy of getting in cars and things, because I had that for several years afterwards. I did not want to get on the road. So I totally identify. Tell me, I want to go back and unpick a little bit what you said about cueing and what Kat did, because, it, you know, it sounds like that was such a pivotal kind of transformative, you know, experience for you. Like, what was it that she – and now that you're learning Pilates as an instructor, and you're being exposed to kind of behind the curtain, you know, like the mechanics of what, and you're sounds like you're now recognizing, oh, that's what Kat did. You know, that's why she said that.
Did she actually think I was out of
So what was it? What was it that she did and said, and you know, like that made a difference for you?
She would say things that I needed to hear, like, look how strong you are. Look. Like, that move that you're doing is a really advanced move, like, and you're doing it. She'd go and get her phone and film it and be like, look at your extension, like, you're doing it. Because I had so much self-doubt, so I'd be in the move sometimes and be like, is this right? Does this look right? Like, I wouldn't trust that I was doing it. She's like, mate, you're doing it. Like, you're so strong. Look how well you're doing. You had a baby, like, you know, 2 months ago or whatever. Like, she just was so pivotal in me trusting my body and trusting movement again.
So she gave you wins, and she pointed them out to you.
Yeah, 100%. And she was like my little one, well, she still is like my one person cheer squad. She'd get really excited when I could do something, but also she gave me choice. She gave me options at the start of every session. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever felt super structured. It felt like we were just coming together and we were going to make some cool shapes, basically. And I got to say, You know, was there something that I wanted to focus on that we could do? Did I want her to just kind of run me through a bit of a flow? Like every week I got input to what that session would look like. So I've been doing those now weekly for, I don't know, like over a year.
And what was, you know, like what was it like for you going from an environment in just in terms of queuing where you'd been told, you know, lots of rules about everything being perfectly straight and, you know, it sounds like, you know, lots of what we'd call explicit queuing where basically you're given rules about how to move. And going from that to Kat's kind of, I guess what must have seemed quite a laissez-faire sort of, just do it sort of thing.
It was interesting because I obviously was still holding on to a lot of those beliefs. You know, I'd been doing rehab for a long time and had developed, I guess, the belief that those really strict movement instructions were keeping me safe. So I'd question things sometimes, like what should this look like? Where should this be? What does kind of correct form look like or whatever? And Kat would sort of be like, oh, it's, well, where should I be feeling this? She's like, oh, it's sort of whole body, you know, and she wouldn't dismiss my beliefs. She would just move us on from that conversation quite quickly. And so rather than me having someone question what I've been doing for the last 18 months, it was more just a redirection of the focus. And I guess she was showing me through the outcomes, really.
So she didn't directly challenge, you know, anything that you, any of your sort of pre-existing beliefs or assumptions, but she just really, did she deflect them? Like she moved the conversation on, but how did she respond?
So my experience was that she would never question them during our actual movement sessions. So when we were actually moving and I was, she'd deflect and she'd move on or she'd give me a different perspective, but she would never say, oh, you know, it's really frustrating that people think that they need to focus on that or whatever. When we were just,
I want to double click on this and understand what, you know, her process, because, you know, this seems to have been such a profound, you know, pivot for you. That, all right, so you said to her, okay, you're in an exercise and you're going and you're halfway through it and you go, oh, Kat, where should I be feeling this? What would she say?
So I can give you a specific example. We must have been doing some like split series or something on the reformer, and we were doing maybe side like squats, you know, where you're standing on one foot on the carriage, one foot on the and I said, oh, I didn't know until I started rehab that your shins have to be completely parallel when you squat. I've been squatting wrong my whole life until I went to rehab. And she said something like, there are a million different ways to squat, you know, for everybody, and you might feel it in a different part of your body depending on, you know, how you do it. But there isn't a right or wrong way to squat. She said something along those lines.
So not exactly agreeing and not exactly disagreeing.
Yeah, just giving a different perspective, and she wouldn't linger on it, and she would never say, oh, that's wrong. It really frustrates me that they taught you that when we were moving. But we chat lots either side of that session, and that's when she would give me more insight to kind of understanding really what the research says and what her belief is and the way that she teaches. And the more I got to know her and the more that I got to understand the space that she was creating with Good Times, the more I started to just question it myself. So she was I think it would have impacted my confidence more if she had directly questioned everything that I'd done through rehab, because those guys did do a lot of positive for me and my confidence wasn't great. So she was Yeah, I'm sure it was intentional, but I guess the art is to conceal the art, right? So
yes.
It's not until now that I'm doing my teacher training that I'm like, Kat, you are a wizard. You're actually a wizard, because I had no idea how so much of what she was doing was just completely evidence-based.
Mm. So tell me about that now. Now you're a few weeks into your course with Breathe. Mm-hmm. You're going through the curriculum. You're learning about evidence-based cueing and motor learning and other things. So that's giving you a whole new, fresh perspective on, you know, your experience with Kat.
So many pennies are dropping.
Yeah. Rough, so tell me about some of the biggest ones that have dropped for you.
So last week it was all around cueing for motor learning, and I listened to, I'm going to forget the name of the doctors, but I listened to the interview that you did with those two amazing.
Gabby Wolf and Rebecca Luthwaite.
Yep. And just, you know, reading the coursework in our troop with Chloe in the lecture, I can't even pinpoint one specific moment. It was just the whole thing was like, oh my God, this is actually, there's so much evidence behind this, and I've experienced it firsthand that it really, really, really works. It was a massive kind of penny drop for me.
So it made me realize
it wasn't why I decided to do the course at all. The reason I decided to do the course was because I love Pilates, and it's definitely my happy place, and it's made such a difference to my life coming through, you know, I had Pilates before trauma, but now coming through what I've come through, Pilates and Kat have been so pivotal. So that's why I wanted to do the course. But now understanding all of that research, and I've kind of looked ahead at, you know, looking at when we've got fearless movement coming up in a few modules, and just thinking this is amazing. And I have lived and breathed this completely. I've experienced it firsthand that this absolutely works. Like, there's obviously you've got all the evidence, but anecdotally for me, it 100% it works, and it's changed my life. It's changed my husband's life. It's changed my kids' lives. Like, I've got so much to kind of credit Kat for, really, without being too over the top.
And this is not a paid commercial, by the way.
It's not, I know. I feel so cheesy, but it's the truth. Like, my whole family knows how much of a difference it's made. And our weekly timetable has always been pretty much scheduled around, okay, we just got to, how do we make Pilates work on Thursday morning? Because it's made such a difference. Yeah. And I'm on my reformer on my own at home, obviously now that I'm doing the course. But once I started working with Kat, I was just doing crazy stuff at home on my own as well.
That is such a wonderful, you know, thing to hear. So tell me about where you're at now.
Physically?
Yeah.
So I get little reminders, I guess. If I am, you know, if I go too far into extension without kind of thinking about what I'm doing, I get just little niggles and little reminders, but they work themselves out with movement. I would say physically, in terms of my injuries, I'm probably as good as I could expect to get. So I'll have those little reminders my whole life. But that doesn't bother me, and I can work around them, and I'm strong. I'm really strong again. And I'm healthy, and I'd never ever thought that I would be physically, and not talking aesthetically, but just physically strength wise and capability wise and independence wise where I'm at now.
What a great story. And thanks so much for sharing it. You know, like, I know this, it can't be, you know, fun, especially the first part of it. So
yeah,
thank you.
It's not fun, but it, you know, it is, it's a big part of who I am. So sometimes it's good to talk about it.
Is there anything else that you want to, you know, share, talk about? You know, if you had a billboard you could put on, you know, giant slogan on it, what would you put on it? Is there anything else you want to share?
No, I think you pretty much captured it. That's been my experience, and I love Pilates.
Well, Pilates loves you too.
Yeah, yep.
Thanks so much, Jo. It's been a real pleasure.
No worries. Yeah, thanks heaps, Raph.